Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's March 21st, Friday. Today I might be a man. Tomorrow I'll be glad. Cause I got Friday on my mind. I was kind of expecting a slow news today on Friday. But there's news all over the place. Let's get down to it. I'll try to fit as much as I can in today's News and Comment podcast. We begin with important ruminations from our friend Russ Tice, who was a top analyst at the NSA till they bounced him back in 2005. And today I caught up with Russ because earlier this week, on the 18th, the Washington Post published an important story exposing another Ed Snowden document that details a program called Mystic. And we are told that Mystic is able to capture 100% of a certain country's telephone calls. And so I got curious about that because the Washington Post says at the request of U.S. officials, it is withholding details that could be used to identify the country where the system is being employed or other countries where its use was envisioned. And in the first sentence of this news account, the Washington Post uses the term foreign country. But when I asked Russ Tice about what kind of technology is required to capture 100% of a country's phone calls, well, a leading suspect would be our own, the United States of America, because we know from Mark Klein and the disclosure of the NSA intercept of the massive data switch at AT&T at the Folsom Street office in San Francisco that the NSA has tapped into all of the nodes of the fiber optic networks in the United States. Do they have that capability in a foreign country? Well, that's what we ruminate about in today's in-depth interview podcast. And in talking with Russ back and forth, one of the things that we speculated about is whether the country that is the beneficiary of 100% NSA collection is an English-speaking country, because the documents shown by the Washington Post don't indicate any translations or language specialists being used to review these calls. And so it's a fascinating discussion, and I hope you will avail yourself of it. It's available for subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. And here's a key excerpt from my conversation with Russ Tice, where we're talking about the metadata collection program and how the metadata provides an index for the millions of recorded phone calls held by the NSA.
So for the rank and file to look up whatever they're looking for, they have to have access to the index. Now, here, the index is more important for something else, by the way. The index has the cover from the monkey, from the blind monkey court, which is the FISA court. They have the approval monkey stamp with FISA, so that when they come after somebody and then they want to throw the their phone call information in a court of law, they did this to me at a grand jury, and they did this to James Risen in the grand jury.
Hold on, Russ. That can't be true, because President Obama has told us that there have been no abuses of the NSA data collected. I'm sorry, you're going to have to retract that statement.
Well, what's his definition of abuse?
Well, his friends reviewed the information and told him there hadn't been any abuse.
Oh, there you go. Everything's fine, right?
Okay, so, I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. So it's a way so that they can just like Tim Clemente, you know, and when he said this about a year ago, this is what, because I hadn't talked to my sources inside the NSA in some time.
And let me just remind people, Clemente is a former FBI agent who appeared on CNN and other networks after the Boston Marathon bombing and said that they have ways to listen back to the elder Tsarnaev's phone calls to his girlfriend. That's the explicit context for this.
Right, and Aaron Burnett said, you're not talking about the contact, you're just talking about the fact that the phone call was made, unless it was a computer, because she was apparently well enough or knows enough to ask that question. And he said, no, we're not talking about a computer-generated phone call, and we're not talking about the metadata. We're talking about the content, word for word, what he said to his wife before he was ever suspected of being involved in anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what tipped the trigger for me. I went, oh, no. I know NSA's wanted this capability, and I figured it'd probably be 2015 before they'd have it. And that's when I immediately contacted my sources inside NSA, and we had a little powwow to discuss what was going on. That was my trigger almost a year ago.
Our full conversation with Russ Tice is available for you today. That's for subscribers at peterbcollins.com. And if you're not a subscriber, get on board. I need your support to keep this machinery going and to cover the costs of producing the daily podcasts and our in-depth interviews each week. I'm grateful to Craig Balog. He recently signed up and pays a premium level for monthly support of the Peter B. Collins Show. Judy Holloway is a longtime subscriber, Steve Wozenski, and Ray Welch has been a longtime double subscriber to the Peter B. Collins podcast. I hope you'll join him. Just take my invitation, go to the peterbcollins.com website. Under my picture, there's a link that says sign up. You can choose $5, $10, $20 a month, whatever fits your budget. Our best deal is the $50 annual subscription. And for new annual subscribers in the U.S., I will send you your bonus gifts, a copy of the rockin' CD called Red Flag by John Dist. A lot of great political, topical music in here. And we've got a bag of kick-ass Kona coffee beans coming your way from our friend Russ Archibald on the Big Island of Hawaii. Also, you can support us with or without a subscription by clicking on the banner ad at peterbcollins.com that takes you to audible.com. When you get there, you can sign up for a free 30-day trial. They'll give you your first audiobook download free, and you can cancel within 30 days. You won't have to pay them anything. But no matter what you do, once you sign up for that trial subscription, Audible will generate a $15 check to the Peter B. Collins podcast, and that's a way you can support my work here. More on the national surveillance state. There is an actual dollar cost to the exposure of the government spying programs. And I want to underscore that this is not a cost borne by people who support Ed Snowden. This is the cost of the secrecy and the unconstitutional behavior of our government. Microsoft says it's lost significant customers, including the government of Brazil. IBM says it is spending more than $1 billion to build server farms, data centers, in other parts of the world, so that their foreign customers feel more secure that their information is safe from the prying eyes of the United States. An analyst for information technology and innovation, Daniel Castro, estimates that the cloud computing industry alone may lose $35 billion in the next 2 years. Forrester Research, a tech research firm, said the losses could be as high as $180 billion. Now, even if those losses are exaggerated, cut them in half. That's still a big hit to the tech industry based in this country. And that's one reason why leaders of the Silicon Valley tech giants scored a meeting with President Obama at the White House this afternoon. Apparently, Zuck is there, Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, and Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google. They describe themselves as confused and frustrated by reports of the behavior of the U.S. government. Now, as we pointed out the other day, some of this is bullshit. And I'm especially suspicious of Google, that has a deep relationship with the intelligence community, as we have exposed in previous podcasts. And so, while I sympathize that private corporations are taking the hit for the government's bad behavior, we suspect that they know and have known a lot more than they acknowledge about what our government has been doing that has compromised their own security, that of their customers, and and posed a big hit on their bottom lines, or at least potentially that is looming in the future. On to other news. We have long been covering the FBI killing of Ibrahim Todashev, a young man of Russian origin, Chechen actually, who was connected by law enforcement to the Tsarnaev brothers, who are being accused of the Boston Marathon bombing last April 15th. And as we have reported repeatedly here, last year, this guy Todashev was killed by an FBI agent, and the shifting stories of the FBI, together with the fact that they didn't allow local police to investigate this murder. No, the FBI reserves the right to be the sole investigator of wrongdoing or alleged wrongdoing by the FBI. And we have this history. From 1993 to 2011, agents fatally shot 70 suspects and wounded 80 others. And in every single case, the FBI's investigation of the FBI concluded that the use of force was justified. So today, the FBI reports that its investigation of itself, which is nearly complete, is expected to conclude that the agent followed the department's guidelines on the use of force when he killed Todashev last year. Now, the New York Times version of this report falsely indicates that the Florida Department of Justice or Department of Investigation has also investigated and cleared the FBI agent. Not so fast. You go to the Guardian newspaper in Britain, and let's credit their reporter, Richard Luscombe, in Miami. The story leads, Florida state prosecutors Friday denied that they had cleared an FBI agent who shot dead a friend of the Boston Marathon bomber, that would be alleged Boston Marathon bomber, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, while interrogating him. The state attorney in Florida, Jeff Ashton, denied that he had come to the same conclusion as the FBI investigation of itself. Ashton's spokesman said he had completed his investigation but would make a final decision on how to proceed over the weekend. Ashton issued an angrily worded statement today after media reports claimed he had decided not to charge the officer, saying the leaks on which they're based are inaccurate and unfair. Now, we still don't even know the name of the agent who pumped, was it 6 or 7 shots into this young man? And we have only one source of information about this. That's the FBI. They tell us that Todashev flipped out when he was being questioned, and that he confessed to being involved with Tamerlan Tsarnaev in a triple murder in a community in Massachusetts 3 years before the events of last April. And so this is just another stinky FBI scheme. And we have government, we have elected leaders who are supposed to provide oversight of the FBI. They just rubber-stamped James Comey as the new director of the FBI for a 10-year term without asking him any tough questions, even though his confirmation occurred after the Todashev killing. I don't believe there was one question raised by a member of the committee at the Comey confirmation. And the other stinky aspect of this is that two people in Florida, one a girlfriend of Todashev's, were deported. And I don't have time to go into the details of those deportations, but heavy pressure was used on these people to silence them. And when they wouldn't go quietly, they just were shipped out of the country. They had to go. More disturbing news related to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And as you probably know, Jason Leopold is a friend, colleague, and one of the most active users of the Freedom of Information Act. And a young man who is, they're not in cahoots, Leopold and Ryan Shapiro. But Shapiro is a graduate student at MIT who also is an active user of FOIA. So he made an application to disgorge information from the FBI about an alleged plot by the FBI to use snipers to kill leaders of Occupy in Texas. Now, we know that the government used the post-9/11 enhanced law enforcement apparatus, including the Joint Terrorism Task Forces, the fusion centers that are regional places where local and federal law enforcement combined their activities. Bo Hodai has been on our program several times and done excellent reporting based on public records about the way the government rolled up Occupy in the city of Phoenix. Now, no snipers were ever mentioned in the Phoenix case. But this has come to light because Judge Rosemary Collier of the U.S. District Court in the District of Columbia has issued a ruling sharply critical of the FBI, demanding an explanation as to why it's refusing to give information to Ryan Shapiro. Judge Collier said that the reason that the FBI gave for denying information and for heavily redacting documents was not sufficient. And a better explanation has to be ginned up if the Bureau continues to refuse to share the info. So Shapiro is researching this alleged sniper plot. He sued the FBI after submitting a FOIA request. The FBI claims that the information Shapiro is asking for is exempt. But this is a really important set of issues. The plot to kill Occupy leaders was first discovered in documents released to a civil rights organization in Washington, D.C. as part of a separate FOIA request. The documents released by the FBI referenced, quote, a plan to kill the leadership via suppressed sniper rifles. Suppressed rifles. Would that be from the Fast and Furious stash? Well, I don't know. According to the Washington Post, the FBI uses the exemption to withhold information compiled for law enforcement purposes to stymie legitimate requests for information. So we will follow this very alarming development for you and update you if we learn more. Also in Texas, a group of immigrants who are being held in a corporate-run prison at the behest of ICE. The immigration, what does ICE stand for? I always have trouble with that one. Immigration control, I don't know what it is. Anyway, they have joined a hunger strike. The hunger strike started in Tacoma, Washington, at a similar prison facility run for ICE by a private corporation called the Geo Group. And the prisoners are hunger striking to demand better treatment in these prisons, an end to the massive deportation that has occurred under President Obama, and other assertions of basic human rights that are being denied to them on a regular basis. And I have tried to shine a light on the ICE prisons, which are barbaric places that don't live up to the basic standards of human rights that we demand of others in the world. Meanwhile, in Turkey, the increasingly strong-armed government of Prime Minister Erdogan arbitrarily has shut down Twitter. The government is standing by an order to block the use of Twitter. And Erdogan announced that this is just an evil distraction and also that it aids terrorism. Now, he's in the middle of a big crackdown against the backdrop of a major scandal, a corruption scandal. And all those tweets are inconvenient to him. I don't know if anybody from Twitter was at that White House meeting today and asked the president to intervene with our alleged Democratic ally in Turkey. Well, the ratcheting up of sanctions is going neener, neener, neener. So Obama announced a round of sanctions, then Putin announced a round of sanctions. These all, of course, over the Crimea issue. Then the U.S. announced a second round of sanctions. And to his credit, Vladimir Putin is saying, oh, come on, that's enough. Let's declare a ceasefire on sanctions. And I'd like to point out that while I don't support the Russian, annexation of Ukraine, that this is far from a picture of just all good guys and all bad guys. And one of the most annoying and offensive comments that I heard on television this week about the situation in Ukraine came from a man who's a freshman senator from Connecticut. And in his first year, he kind of distinguished himself as somebody who was calling for the closure of Guantanamo, somebody who was urging President Obama to get out of Afghanistan even faster than he has planned to do. His name is Chris Murphy. But my estimation of him dropped several notches when I heard him interviewed by Rachel Maddow. And I jotted down some notes from it because Murphy says that Putin fears the unrest we saw in the streets of Kiev leading to Yanukovych fleeing the country. Now, we've got to tell the whole story. The unrest in Kiev was partly stimulated by the United States, by the $5 billion that we dropped on 65 different non-governmental organizations over the past few years to destabilize the Yanukovych government, which, as I frequently point out here, was corrupt, but nonetheless elected by the people of Ukraine. So here again, Chris Murphy says, Putin fears the unrest that we saw in Kiev in the streets that led to Yanukovych fleeing the country. He, Putin's worried that that's going to happen in Moscow. So he's got to shut down this kind of democracy on his border as quickly as possible. Now, this is the way that Obama and his supporters are trying to propagandize the American people. That the overthrow of a corrupt but elected president of Ukraine is, quote, this kind of democracy. And we are declaring that this self-appointed interim government is legitimate. It's not. Maybe after the elections in May, you could claim some legitimacy. And so the U.S. doesn't have any cards to play here. Putin has them all. The European Union will only go so far in imposing sanctions on Russia because they're a big trading partner and because Putin controls their natural gas supply. That's very cut and dried. In addition, as I've pointed out, we need Putin for the talks with Iran and for the situation in Syria. Now, when it comes to the picture in Iran, there were talks this week that were described as fruitful. But the Russian delegate to those talks hinted that Russia may change its posture in supporting or brokering the talks between the U.S., its allies, and the Iranians over its nuclear program because of Ukraine. And this is where the Cold War moves of the Obama administration have to be carefully calibrated. Because if Russia changes the course of the talks with Iran, and we reported yesterday Israel has allocated $3 billion, the same amount that we pay them every year, for an attack on Iran, we could have a world war unraveling before our eyes in very short order. And put aside all the talk about, you know, Chamberlain and Hitler and compromise, Crimea is not important in the geopolitical picture. And in addition to this, the man who most recently served as America's ambassador to Syria, a guy who's fairly respectable, his name is Robert Ford, He told the New York Times today that it's likely that President Bashar al-Assad will remain in power for the medium term, and that a year from now, that would be the completion of 4 years of civil war, the country would still be under control of competing factions. Ford's assessment is that as long as the so-called rebels, the militants in Syria, threaten the Alawite minority, of which the Assad family are the leaders, that they will never be able to oust Assad and take control of the entire country. And this is a very important statement from a man who was part of the team that flatly called for the overthrow of Assad and said that the die is cast, he can't stay. So Syria is an intractable problem, and we need Russia. After all, it was Putin who intervened and saved Obama from himself over the chemical weapons flap last August. Back in these United States, Duke Energy, which has incredible influence over the government of North Carolina, is finally being brought to heel, or at least they're being exposed, for illegally pumping as much as 61 million gallons of toxic coal ash wastewater into two rivers in North Carolina in the past year. And Duke says, oh, you know, we got a permit to pump this water when we're doing maintenance or when there's a rain and it fills up the ponds. But the amount of water here goes well beyond any exclusion for maintenance. And even the corporate goons who report to Art Pope, who is the de facto leader of North Carolina, its governor is the former CEO of Duke Energy, they are being forced to come to terms with this massive corporate pollution. As you may know, next week is the deadline to sign up for the Affordable Care Act. And President Obama was on Ellen. He was there with Zach and the potted plants. He's conducting a massive outreach effort to get people to go to the state exchanges and sign up for health care. He's especially focusing on young people who are needed to make the numbers work. Only when people try to sign up, it's not the same glitches that the national website had last October. Different glitches. In California, if you try to sign up over the phone, your chance of getting through is less than 50%. And in Oregon, they're having a series of headaches. Website crashes, limited access, that have made it very difficult for people to sign up. This is one of the most poorly executed federal program rollouts I have ever seen. And I'll spare you repetition of why we need single payer and how Obama sold out to the corporate interests, and that I don't want to give aid and comfort to the Republican obstructionists over healthcare reform. But anybody who's objective knows how badly bungled this has been. And finally, today I want to thank my friend and videographer Tom McAfee. Last Saturday, thousands of people congregated at the state capitol in Sacramento to send a message to Governor Jerry Brown, don't frack California. And as we wrap up today, I want you to hear some excerpts from the audio track of the video that Tom shot. And I'll put up a link to the video so you can load it onto your own computer and watch it at your leisure. And I hope Jerry Brown gets the message soon. Because as we're in the middle of this significant drought, the idea that we can divert precious water resources into fracking in a state that has earthquake faults all over the goddamn place is just ridiculous. And I think Jerry Brown is starting to get the message. But he can be an ornery, stubborn son of a bitch. And I say that with some affection for Governor Moonbeam. Here you go from Sacramento, the big rally last Saturday.
We have about 4,000 people here today.
We live in Livermore.
We're from San Luis Obispo.
From Marin County, California.
Castro Valley.
Fresno, California.
From Los Angeles.
California. I'm from New York City.
I'm from Carson, California.
The LA City Council 2 weeks ago advanced a moratorium. Give a big hand to LA.
I'm here today because it just needs to stop. We need to stop poisoning the earth, and it's just foolish.
It's going to pollute everything. It's going to use up water we don't have.
Fracking is terrible for the environment.
We know that fracking is wasteful. It's
incredibly dangerous.
Insanity beyond insanity.
Destructive.
Fracking on the San Andreas Fault. I mean, how stupid is that?
California, we do not want our water contaminated with methane and benzene. Oh. Governor Brown, California doesn't want our water depleted from fracking and on any hydraulic drilling method. We are in a drought, or haven't you noticed?
No more fracking! No more fracking!
To Governor Brown, follow what your people are asking you to do.
I think the governor has to wake up.
Governor Brown certainly is aware that we have a crisis with water.
So, why don't you listen, Governor Brown? We all want this.
Hey, Jerry Brown, don't frack my California. And to the rest of you, thanks for listening. Feel free to share this podcast with absolutely anyone.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.